This is Steph, or Mrs. Monday Q Info. I'm here and happy to tell you about Good Walk Coffee and what a great product it is. It's something I drink every day. I drink Good Walk Coffee on those early days that I'm headed to the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I drink it the rest of the week when I'm getting those kids off to school. It's a coffee that tastes great. It makes me happy. It's an awesome product. It's an awesome company that supports Ryan in all of the great work that he does. And so if you'd like to help support them, head over to goodwalkcoffee.com, enter the promo code FIREPIT, and get 20% off of your order.
I'm going deep at the Monday Q. If it's the only thing I ever do, the car is where I sleep.
Welcome back to Any Given Monday. This episode is really a great insight into the grind that is. Callum Tarran is now a PGA Tour member. Had a very nondescript college career at a small school called Radford. How he got there is very interesting. It's kind of great insight into what Europeans do in order to get over here to the United States and have college here. And then just kind of slowly progressed through the ranks. Had a decent year in China, then a great year in China, then came to the Corn Ferry Tour and had an okay year. And so we kind of just talk about his progression and then also talk about what life is like off the course. He just had his first baby. That trip is crazy. And just life on and off the course. And now kind of talking about, we finish up with talking about what a Corn Ferry card looks like. And basically, it's a half of a PGA Tour card and the pressure that he faces now to keep his card. And he's already talking this early about whether next year he might go back to the Corn Ferry Tour and kind of find a mix of schedule between the PGA and the Corn Ferry Tour. So great, honest insight into what his life looks like, his career looks like, talking about very serious things like miscarriages and not being home for those type of things. And I just really appreciate his honesty and in-depth look into his career. So enjoy. Welcome back to Any Given Monday. I think, Callum, you're going to be the first PGA Tour member on Any Given Monday. I usually don't stretch to the PGA Tour, but great story and a very interesting career. Callum Tarran, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's like you say, it's a to be the first PGA Tour player, it's a pleasure to be on here.
All right, Callum. So let's start. I think the an interesting thing that like a lot of listeners probably don't know is how you got to Radford. So obviously from, if you don't know Callum, from his accent, he's English. So you and I talked a little bit off after you got your card about how this came about. So you're in England, you're playing well. How do you... is the goal for most players over there to get the exposure in the United States and come play in it in a US-based university, Callum?
Yeah, I think there's two kind of routes that people in England or the UK or even in Europe kind of take. Route one being you're in the international setup, so you play for England and you're in an England squad or a squad of your country's nationality, or the other option is to go to the US. I wasn't in an England squad. I was in kind of on the fringes. So when it came to time to apply or look for the next step, I wanted to go to America pretty much straight away, you know. It got to a point in my... as a kid, I was a soccer player, and I started playing golf at 12, I think it was. And as my game started to develop and I started getting better and competing at, well, first of all, at my golf club, and then obviously you move on to local events, national events. When I started getting to a level where I thought, yep, I want to go to America and try and do the scholarship route. Yeah, once I had that set in my head, I was all for it. And Yeah, I applied to, it's almost like an agency that you apply to. There's quite a few of them now. The more popular, back when I did it, there were few and far between. But I signed up with an agency and they kind of make a portfolio for you alongside your resume, swing videos, stats, and all that fun stuff. And they kind of sell you to universities in America.
So how did you get to Radford? Had you ever heard about Radford? Had you, like, what's that kind of that process like?
Yeah, I hadn't heard about Radford, and I didn't come over to look at the universities that had made offers to me. I don't mind saying this, but it was probably financially driven. I got a full ride at Radford, which I probably needed to come to America. My family, I mean, they've supported me throughout my golf career, but we all know how expensive college and universities can be, especially for an international student. So that was it was based off that, really. I had a couple of other offers, but weren't as strong as Radford's full ride. So I kind of just went with that. And the program had a couple of Europeans on it already, an English guy from Exeter or Exmouth. Mm-hmm. And I'd spoke to him, and then there was a Danish kid on there as well. So I kind of reached out to them, and they reassured me it was a good program, and yeah, I should commit. So that's how it went, really.
I mean, there has to be a lot of trust, Callum, in both the coaches. I mean, he's seeing you basically on video only and like scores and all that kind of stuff. And then on your part, just to like, hey, I mean, this is like a huge, not only career decision, but life decision and those kind of things. So I assume there's just a lot of trust in, like, I mean, it's got to be scary though too, right? Like, you're making a life decision based on like some video calls and videos, basically.
That's one thing I would do if I was to go back and go through the whole process again. I would make a trip out and check out all the colleges that had offered me something, just to kind of get a feel for it. But I kind of wasn't advised to do that, which is strange, but I'm sure now as these agencies develop, and obviously they're sending a lot more people over to the US to compete in different programs, tennis, soccer, basketball, baseball. I think that's one thing that these guys are getting advised now. Look, go over there, make a journey, see what these colleges and universities are like, and go and obviously do some research yourself, you know. But yeah, it was a huge decision. I always remember when I got dropped off at the airport by my parents, and I don't mind traveling, but I always remember, got my bags checked in, and I went up the escalator, and I kind of turned around and looked at them, and I just started tearing up. I was like, oh, this is real, you know. I'm leaving. But like you say, once I got there and got settled in, it was I never looked back. It was unbelievable. Great experience.
I want to talk a little bit about your college career, but I always ask Europeans that travel to the United States, do you think you start your pro career, Callum, with a little bit of an advantage from the standpoint over Americans? Because Americans are never away from home. I mean, they might be away at college, but obviously they have access to go home easier than you did from Radford. Yeah. And like being a pro golfer, there's a transition off the course as much as there is on the course. Do you think that gave you an advantage being like just being used to being away from your family and friends?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, I can translate that better for when I went to China as a professional. I mean, that's obviously another step in the journey, but a lot of Americans, I've tried that route, and they find it really hard because, like you said, you guys in America have got everything, the infrastructure, the golf courses, and everything over here is great. But when it comes to traveling, I totally agree with you that the average American, you don't really need to travel, you know.
You can basically live at home and play mini tour golf here. I mean, you don't have to ever leave home.
I agree. But on the flip side of it, for a European we don't have these college programs like you guys do, which is a shame. I honestly think there's a market for that. If these these universities somehow were able to copy the American system, it would be, it just makes sports worldwide stronger, because I'm sure there's kids out there that would love to have the opportunity to play golf or any sport at a college level, that there's obviously factors that don't allow them to. And I think if Europe or the rest of the world could get this college system that the US has, I think, yeah, I think sports would be better in as a whole, really. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there's kids who are left behind from Europe that either don't develop at the university system in Europe, or don't have the, you know, the financial means to come over here and chase it. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
When you came here, Callum, was, I mean, every kid, I say this in every episode, is like, every kid wants to be a pro golfer, but was it, what was kind of the percentages of coming to the United States? Meaning, like, did you come over here for golf first and an education second, or education first and golf second?
Yeah, I'd say the first one, golf first and education second. But once I'd got to college and obviously kind of knew what I was in for, I took my school pretty seriously. Because, like you say, at the end of the day, there's no guarantees in life or in golf that you're going to be a professional golfer and make a living. So, yeah, I tried my hardest at school. If I went back again, I'd probably pick a different degree, because something stronger to fall back on. I did marketing, and that was kind of just the generic choice, you know. But if I was to go back now, I'd do something that, as like you say, as you grow up, and obviously my career right now, but as you grow up, you become more familiar what you would actually want to do as a person. But when you're at the age we are at college, I mean, a large percentage of people kind of don't know what they want to do.
Right.
And that changes as you get older, you know. I'd have done some, I don't know what I would have done, but I would have definitely maybe done something in finance or an engineering degree. I honestly don't know, but I would have taken that choice more seriously than I did when I actually made that choice back at college, you know?
I mean, you and I have talked about this after you got your card. I mean, your college career was solid, but it wasn't anything super special by any means. Was it still always the goal, Callum, even as like your senior year progressed and you didn't have this like great college resume to fall back on? Was it still to turn pro immediately after your last year?
I did have interest in turning pro, but same thing, financially, it wasn't, I couldn't just, like you say, get the backing to go and travel to all these different Q schools and try and create myself an opportunity. So after I graduated, I went back home, and I worked at the local golf club, helping out with the carts and things like that, and tried to save some money. That was 2000, and so I graduated in 14. Yeah, the rest of 14. 2015, I played some mini tour events back home, but like you say, it's rather expensive, and it's not great. And then at the back end of 15, I decided obviously to commit to Q School in China, where I met Mark and a bunch of other great guys. And that, since then, I kind of haven't looked back. It's just been a progression to where I am now, which is great.
But, I mean, again, you and I have talked about this off. Is it just the fact that you do it full time, Callum? Is that the turn in your golf game? Or is it like maturity? Is it the fact that like, hey, this is what I have to do for a livelihood, so I'm going to take it more seriously? Is it teaching, you know, people teaching you, helping you, or is it a combination of all those things of why your golf game turned a corner?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all those things. I mean, I've looked back at swing videos of when I was in college compared to where I am now, and I've always been able to hit the ball quite a long way, which has its advantages and disadvantages. But I think if my college coach was able to help me technically as a player, so address obviously the issues that I had with my swing or short game or putting or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
I think that would have been helped me develop as a golfer, because the talent's there, but I don't think there's enough emphasis on the technical side for me in college. It was kind of, obviously we did little things, but at the end of the day, you look at some of these players coming out of college, they're all technically sound, they know where their golf balls go, and the short games are mustard. And at the end of the day, that produces a good golf game, you know? So I think it's a combination of all, just kind of maturing as a player and maturing as a professional, you know, getting the best out of my golf game as much as I can. So I'd say it's a combination of everything.
Well, Mark sent me some notes. For those listening, Mark Baldwin and Callum hung out in China, chasing the China series, the PGA Tour China, for a long time. So 2016 Q School in Kunming, I heard it was like super, super cold, and you had filed a friend there, Michael Skelton. Is that how you got to China, Callum?
Yes. Yep. So we played golf in end of 15, like maybe let's say November, and we were just chatting away. I said, "Oh, what's your plan for next year?" And he'd done some research, and he said, "I'm going to China Q School," and I kind of laughed at him because he won't mind me saying this, but he is a bit of a fruitcake now and again. but after that conversation, I went home, did some research myself. And it, like you say, I literally signed up that night. I was like, I'm coming with you. So yeah, we went to Kunming, set off on our journey.
I mean, that Q School kind of like, do you look back at that, Cal, as like a turning point in your career? I mean, you got status, and we'll talk about like your progression there, but it has to be one of the bigger points in your career, right?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, it was kind of, well, like you say, when you're going out to China, it's not cheap. Total different country, and didn't know what to expect. But there was four English guys who all travelled together to the Q School. So myself, Michael Skelton, a guy named Sam Robinson, and my old caddy, James Moore. And to be honest, the week leading up to that, my grandma, Nana, had just died. And obviously that was not great. But my mum said, look, you're going to miss the funeral, but you have to go and do it. So I went out and did it. And I think that it played on my mind that obviously it wasn't just all about golf. It kind of just freed me up. You know, there was other things going on in my life that were almost more important. So I just went out and played golf freely, you know, and managed to obviously have a good week. And I think I believe I came third. I think I can't remember rightly, but yeah, managed to get a full card on the China PGA Tour of China. And yeah, so there was a few things going on, and obviously the goal was to get some kind of status out there, and I managed to achieve that. So that was good. Yeah.
Yeah. And for those that don't know, PGA Tour China had the most money, like prize money. And it got better as the years went on. And it also was from between Latin America and Canada, the cheapest to travel. But
yep.
Cal, it was also like you had to, I mean, I think it had the most camaraderie from what I've heard, right? I mean, you guys had to always like stay in the same place for the most part, travel in buses together. So like, it had to be like a cool, like it had to be almost college like, didn't it?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you had guys from obviously the US, a bunch of guys from Australia, New Zealand. There was a few guys from in Europe, and then obviously there was a couple of English guys as well. So it was great fun. And like you say, I met some great guys out there that I'm still friends with to this day. And yeah, it did bring everyone together, because at the end of the day, we're in China traveling around. Not many people speak English, and not many of us foreigners speak Chinese. So it was tough at times, but like you say, we all did come together and made the best of a mini tour situation where you're just trying to grind to the next level.
I mean, can you explain to people, from what I've heard, a lot of China golf is jungle golf, and it's basically like you hit it off of the fairway, you're going to make double, basically. I mean, is it the hardest golf you've played, Kelm? Is it so different from, I mean, I know there's variations in the golf course, but for the most part, it was pretty difficult courses, right?
Yes. The first event that me and Michael arrived to was in, was it Zhengzhou? Anyway, the Zhengzhou Open or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
And we thought this golf course was the tightest golf course we've ever seen. Yeah. And this is gospel as well. So Michael Skelton, super talented golfer, played Walker Cup, probably the best golfer I've ever watched play golf. Just incredible talent. He didn't hit one driver off a tee peg for the first six events because he just felt so claustrophobic on these golf courses that he just kind of needed to keep something in front of him.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was very good at hitting the driver off the floor. It still went 300 yards and he was hitting it high, low, mid flight. It was very impressive, but we just got out there and we couldn't believe how tight and how much trouble these golf courses had on them. OB one side, hazard on the next, on the other side. So it was, you had to hit it straight. But then the golf courses are actually quite long as well. So you couldn't just poke a two iron off the tee. You kind of made your man up and hit the driver.
Yeah.
And China changed my golf game totally. I became quite a good driver of the golf ball. Because you had to be. If you didn't, you were making a big number. I mean, there was some crazy numbers happening. I think one guy was leading the tournament by four, going to the final round, and like he made a 16 on a par five. I mean, it was that kind of deal, you know. So
yeah,
he went from leading by four to behind by like nine or something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember. I had a good friend who played over there and he's like, you know, I mean, you could be going along perfectly in one swing, you know, and all of a sudden you're going to shoot, you know, 75, 76, because it's just like, and I assume I mean, you said it in the last answer, but I assume that makes it helped your golf game from the standpoint of it wasn't short. And so you couldn't, like you said, hit iron. It forced you to hit driver. And I assume when you came back here, Kelm, it makes even tight golf courses feel relatively open because you face the tightest golf courses.
Yeah, so obviously I've spent 3 years out there. This is just linking to how tight the golf courses were and where I was at the time. So when I graduated to the Corn Ferry, the first event in Exuma, I met the tightest guys and we were doing like a kind of an overall fitting of my bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hitting my driver. I was launching, and for the golf geeks out there, I was launching my driver at like 5.5 degrees, 6 degrees. And the tightest guy goes to me, why are you hitting it so low?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I've just been playing in China for 3 years and there's literally shit either side of these golf holes. So you've got to figure out how to hit it straight. So he was like, okay. He's like, can you hit it higher? And I was trying, and still it was launching so low, but I'd just been accustomed to just getting something in play, you know? And then I remember playing my first, so this is linked, I played my first season on the Corn Ferry, and I go, this after the season finishes, I go back home to the tightest guy, and his question was, why are you launching the driver at 14 degrees? And I'm oh. So I've went from one extreme to the other just because obviously what the golf courses have to offer.
Yeah.
So now I've kind of found that middle ground and but it just proved that, like you say, the golf course is shaped the way I was playing my golf and swinging almost. And like you say, I mean, I've played some of the hardest golf courses in China that I've ever played. It was crazy.
All right. I want to talk about your 2018 season in China, but before that, Mark says, I have to ask you about, I'm going to mess up the pronunciation, Chen Ji A Gen Hotel in Lanhai.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. That place.
Let me hear the story.
Crazy. So Yeah, it was like a Lynx golf course, and I think the host hotel for that week was I want to say it was like either a Renaissance hotel or a Hyatt. Okay. And it was super expensive, like too expensive. It was
yeah.
And this might not sound expensive now, but it was like maybe $250, $300 a night. Yeah. But we were used to paying $40 a night at hotels.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys went over to China because like everything was relatively cheap and the purses were better.
Yeah. So we managed to find this rinky-dink hotel, and it was the dirtiest, awfulest hotel. I mean, they had this aquarium downstairs, so you went and picked what you wanted from the aquarium, and obviously they would cook it for you. I didn't eat there, but I'd came out of the elevator one morning, and there was like three crabs in the lobby that had jumped out of this aquarium and were just walking around. And I was like, what is going on? This place is crazy. And then in the room, there was like bugs and mites, and oh, it was just awful. I mean, it was awful.
Oh yeah, it wasn't good. Oh, that's amazing. So 2018, I mean, that's obviously you're progressing up. You continue to play well, but 2018, Callum, is a huge turning point in your career. I mean, I remember tweeting about it. I had just started the account, and China was like going strong, and Charlie Saxon was dominating over there. And
yeah,
I mean, Charlie had, I think, three wins that year, and you still beat him on the order of merit. So, I mean, that season is obviously a huge turning point in your career. I mean, I just look back, you made 14 of 14 cuts, 4 second places. I think you had 12 top 25s. I mean, it's an amazing year.
Yeah. It was, I mean, like you say, I think in my PGA Tour China career, which was over, well, it was the 2016 season and the 2018 season and one event in Hong Kong in 2017,
mm-hmm.
I didn't miss one cut.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
No, you didn't.
And I just kind of figured out how to get it round. And it was a time when, like you say, over a period of time, I kind of figured out China, the golf courses and how you had to play them in order to obviously shoot good scores. Mm-hmm. And I got more comfortable at that level. I felt as though I could compete. And well, that 2018 season to win, I mean, still to this day, it's kind of crazy that I did manage to pip Charlie at the last event to win.
Yeah.
To win the Order of Merit. And yeah, people still didn't believe it after it happened, you know, because Charlie had such a quick start and dominated. I mean, he dominated China when I was there. But like you say, I managed just to consistently keep producing results. And yeah, it was crazy to win that money list. I didn't believe that I'd done it when I came off the final green in Hong Kong and everyone's like, you've done it. I was like, I've done what?
Yeah.
Like, you've won the Order of Merit. I was like, no, can't have. And believe it or not, I mean, I remember looking at Charlie and thinking, he it was so hot in Hong Kong. His face was like bright red.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like sunburned, but he just had this white look about him because obviously he was kind of bummed out that I managed to pip him. But
mm-hmm.
I felt bad. I honestly did. I felt like I'd done something wrong, you know. But it worked out. And like you say, Charlie's still on the right path to get into the PGA Tour, so it's worked out for both of us. You know, I think we pushed each other through that phase in our career where it was competitive, you know.
Mm-hmm. When you came here, Callum, I mean, your 2019 season was okay to like all right. Was it part of just like, is the transition from China where like we had talked about, it's kind of a fraternity, everybody kind of travels together because you have to. Like, was there an off the course like time that it took to figure out what was going on the Korn Ferry Tour? Not everybody, not that you don't have friends out there, but it's not as close, I would assume, as PGA Tour China. Is part of the like transition to the Korn Ferry Tour off the course stuff as much as on the course?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we get to go to some amazing places, but I always remember trying to organize getting to the Bahamas and looking at the hotel prices, and I was taking a guy from England with me and thinking, wow, this is going to cost me a lot of money. So yeah, them first few events, like you say, it's a huge learning curve. And I think over time you just get comfortable. Just a new environment. Everything was new. And I honestly didn't know much about the Corn Ferry Tour because it's not a route that many Europeans go down, you know. And now I've done that and been there and obviously managed to graduate, I'm surprised that more people don't enter Q School for Corn Ferry Tour, especially Europeans, because I think it would suit a lot of them. But I think it all boils back down to expense, you know. It's not cheap. But yeah, there was definitely a learning, a huge learning curve in coming over and the transition from China to Corn Ferry. Yeah, for sure. It was, and like you say, if you look at my kind of the way my career's gone, first year in China, obviously I finished really strong that year, but the first 6 to 8 events, I kind of just scraped, got in the cut and finished 45th, 36th, and kind of just was kind of learning my way. Same on the Corn Ferry. I had some good results, but that first year wasn't great. But then over the next 2 years, I've kind of improved, and that happened in China. I'm just hoping that's not the case on the PGA Tour. It's going to take me 3 years to get my feet on the ground. But again, it's all different on each tour, and like you say, you've got to adapt pretty quickly in order to move forward.
I mean, looking back on your career, Calum, I forgot, like, at the 2019 Q School. So you finished, like, just outside of the number 2018 Corn Ferry, yeah, or 2019 Corn Ferry season. So you got to go back to final stage. I mean, you opened with, like, a 78 or something like that. I mean, the next three rounds, I mean, it has to be – I wonder how you look at it. Just from, like, me looking at it, I mean, it kind of – saves your career is probably too strong because you had some status and you never know what would have happened, but guaranteed starts, I mean, is such a huge thing out there. Those last three rounds have to be like some of the more important rounds of your career, right, Calum?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I always remember. So obviously I finished, I think it was 81st or 82nd in 2018. Yeah. So then I knew I had to go back to Q School. I didn't have to go to Q School, but I thought, well, I'll try and improve, get the guaranteed starts. And I always remember it was around Orange County National. I was 3 under through 12. I was cruising, absolutely cruising. And there was a huge leaderboard on one of the tee boxes. And I think I was T12 at one point. So I was like, yeah, I'm just cruising around. And it kind of just got away from me pretty well, very quick. I think I dropped either 7 or 8 shots in the last 7 or 6 holes or something crazy. And that's the one time I've actually came off a golf course and I was pretty close to crying. I mean, it was just not because I was sad. I was just so disappointed
off.
I just remember calling my guy from back home, my coach. And I mean, I was broken. I was literally broken. I said, I can't believe what just happened. I don't know what to say. And he just reassured me. He's like, look, he's like, go out tomorrow and shoot 6 under. You're right back in it. And then after I did that, he said, go and shoot another 6 under. I did that. And he's like, just do it one more time. And I did. And it was just, like you say, it's, when you look back, it is career defining. I mean, who knows what would have happened if I'd have just missed out on Q School.
There's too many stories, Calum. It's easy to say now because you got guaranteed starts and things worked out. But, I mean, I could say I use the Harris English Martin Piller example all the time. For those that don't know, Harris English made a putt in 2018 to knock down Martin Piller to 126 on the PGA Tour money list. And Martin is now like pretty much out of golf. He just missed at second stage. You know, what could have happened had that putt not gone in? Harris English was on the Ryder Cup team. So it's easy to say like, oh yeah, I had status and I would have played well. But the fact is you don't know what would have happened.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I took a lot of confidence from that finish. I think I went out, it was either the first or the second event. I had a top 10. in Nassau. I think, yeah, that was the second event of the 2020 season.
Yeah.
And that pretty much, that finish kind of set me up for the rest of the year, you know. I was still a conditional member, but that kind of guaranteed me through probably three or four reshuffles, you know, because I'd had a good finish. And then after that, it's kind of right. Let's just keep playing. And I think if it wasn't for COVID, I would have graduated in the regular season of 20, because I think I was 23rd at the last regular season event, which is normally Pumpkin Ridge?
Yeah.
Pumpkin Ridge in Oregon. I managed to have a good finish there, and that would have obviously graduated me to the PGA Tour. But we knew that there was no graduating class for 2020, so it was just like, yeah, just let's just keep pounding forward and try and get as many points on the board leading into 2021. But yeah, it just allowed me. I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, it was career defining that Q school, definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about the COVID break, because I think it's an important look, Callum, into gaining perspective off the course. I mean, you went home, you basically, I mean, England was shut down, so you like didn't touch a club for a lot of time. You like helped your girlfriend set up a Pilates studio. You kind of got away from golf. Did that time give you perspective that golf maybe wasn't everything that you had put into it your entire life, that it wasn't who you were, basically, Callum?
Yes, pretty much. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but I actually enjoyed the time off. As golfers now, I mean, it's a year-round sport. I mean, it's very rare that you get two and a half months off without feeling as though you're falling behind, you know? And the weather back home was absolutely glorious. So it was like you say, Ashley, my fiance, set up a Pilates studio. I was getting out on my bike pretty much every day. I was training, and I used it as a almost like as a refresh, but also to keep working on my fitness and just to be ready. When I remember staying with one guy, and he said, when you're in this lockdown, he's like, just work as hard as you would, and because there'll be guys sitting on the couch, and they won't be ready when the restart comes. And I just used it to dial the fitness in and keep as active as possible. And I set up a little net in my garage, hit some shots in there, but there's only so much you can do hitting shots into a garage, you know, into a duvet. I put holes in like three duvets. So my fiance wasn't my best friend, but yeah, there was just feathers all over. But I was lucky enough, when I grew up, on a place called Dinsdale Spa, one of my friends had actually recently acquired that golf club. And even though it was frowned upon, he said, look, just go and practice whenever you want. Just take your own balls, just go down at the end of the range. And I did, but I felt as though I was doing something wrong, which is crazy to look back. Yeah. I'm outside, there's no one around
me. Yeah, you're right.
I'm a professional golfer. I should be allowed to do this, you know? So I did get a little bit in, but nothing too crazy. And yeah, it was frustrating not to be playing golf, but I kind of enjoyed it and used it to be ready when we restarted back up.
Is it an important part of being a professional, Callum, that you need to find that time to get away? Obviously not for 2.5 months. I'm not talking that, but like on a daily or a weekend, just to like step away from the game. And especially when you make steps like you have now, like you graduate to the Corn Ferry, and I've just talked to so many players that are like, I feel like I have to be on the range. I feel like I have to be grinding my ass off, where some of it, like you get to the PGA Tour, same thing, I assume, is like you feel like you've got to do so many things. And part of it is you just got to learn to know when to like, hey, I'm going to take the weekend off and hang with the family or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll happily admit that I find that hard, but I am capable of kind of saying to myself, right, you need a few days rest. I'm in that phase right as we speak. Obviously, I haven't had the best start on the PGA Tour. I feel as though my game's in a great position, but the results haven't arrived yet. And deep down, I know that it'll be fine because I know my game's in a good position, but it is hard to say, right, I'm going to have 3 or 4 days off and just not touch a club. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so this week, I mean, I played in the Monday down in Mexico, and then obviously didn't get through. So I'm having a few days rest just to kind of, yeah, just to get away from it, you know? I mean, and I feel like I should be on the range right now as we speak, but I think these times of rest are important, just as important as obviously when you are grinding. And at the end of the day, you don't just lose your game overnight. So when I go back maybe tomorrow or Saturday, I'll be still in a good position. And but yeah, it's just that mental reset we need at times. And especially when you get on the PGA Tour and you think, wow, like, you just question yourself sometimes, you know. But at the end of the day, if you just, I think it's important to have that downtime and find that balance, you know, that's important.
So we're going to fast forward through a good season, solid season. You got to Boise. Your now fiance is going to have a baby. Just kind of talk through, like, that decision-making. I think it's a great look, Callum, into what a pro golfer struggles with on many decisions. Obviously, a baby being on the biggest end, but, like, of how to balance life and those decisions in golf is, like, you were struggling with, like, hey, I'm really close to my PGA Tour card. I'm going to go into finals, another chance to get my PGA Tour card. Do I go home and for the birth? Do I, you know, I mean, I think it's a great look into how tough it is to balance life and golf as a professional golfer.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, to be honest, it probably spans from 2020. I don't mind actually talking about this, but in 2020 we were unfortunate and we had two miscarriages, one in January and one in June. Mm-hmm. And we found out the day before I flew, so in the January, the day before I flew to Bahamas, we found out. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was the day before I flew to the restart after COVID. So, like, they were two huge things that happened. And like you say, I didn't want to leave my fiance at home to deal with it because it's tough. And but I think we've both realized over time that at the end of the day, it's my job. And it's how I make a living and it's my career.
And it's not a job, Callum, that you can, like, it's not, you have to, unfortunately, you know, the schedule dictates your schedule, not vice versa. It's not like you're calling for vacation, right? I mean,
yeah.
And those are the tough decisions when you go through something very serious, like miscarriages, the guilt or the decision struggles that a lot of people just don't see. They'll never see on TV, right? Like, they see Callum Tarrant and they don't realize, like, hey, his fiance is at home, who just had a miscarriage and he's had to fly here and deal with this all over, you know, FaceTime.
Yeah, exactly. And but I think that kind of got us prepared for when we would be fortunate to obviously have a baby. But on the flip side of that, she kept asking me, like, what's the plan? Are you coming home? And this is months before. This is, like,
right,
I don't know, 3 months before the due date. And I said, look, and my answer was, let's just see how it pans out. Let's just see how it pans out. So I was kind of trying to bide myself some time.
Yeah. You just wanted to have a win in there so the decision was easy.
And I said, look, if I get a win and I'm guaranteed, I'll come home for as long as you want me to.
It didn't
materialize, but so that, yeah, it's, so she was due.
But I think, Callum, that's an important part of it, right? Like, I mean, the chances to get to the PGA Tour, especially after 2 years, are not, like, they may never come again. So it's not like it's easy for people to say who have never played professional golf, like, oh, he should be home for the birth of his child. It's not that easy. Like, you've put your whole life into this career, and to just, when you're literally hundreds or a few thousand dollars from getting your PGA Tour card, it's not like you can just go, yeah, I'm going to go home for the birth of my child.
Yeah, I know. And yeah, that's exactly the deal. I mean, I wanted to be there for the birth. I said, because obviously you have your, not arguments, but your debates about, obviously it's my first child. And I was like, but look, at the end of the day, this might be my only chance of getting that PGA Tour card. She did understand both sides of the story. And we kind of ran the gauntlet of, we would leave it as long as we possibly could until it was time to fly back. Mm-hmm. And I played in Utah. So that was the second from last regular season event. And I managed to have a good week there, which kind of put me in a worse situation, yeah. Because if I had a good week in Nebraska, then I would lock it up.
Yeah.
So I had my flight was planned. I booked flights after Utah. And luckily enough, the only way I could get home that evening from Utah was to take a red eye with JetBlue from Salt Lake City to JFK and then fly from JFK to London in the morning.
I mean, if there's not a better look into the random places that the Korn Ferry Tour plays, it's not, I mean, you're stuck in Utah. There's not like a flight from Utah to London.
No. So I managed to, anyway, I packed all my stuff up when I finished. And I'd met some people for some food with all my luggage with me, which was closer to the airport than where I was staying. Anyway, JetBlue decided to delay the flight 3 hours for some reason, and that resulted in me missing my connection in JFK.
Mm-hmm.
So then, obviously, the time difference, I think it was 8 hours difference between England and Utah. So I went back to my hotel, slept, and decided instead of flying back to England, I was going to fly to Nebraska. So I told my fiance in the morning, look, I'm playing next week. And I said, you just call me if it's happening or you think it's happening, I'll come home. And so we ran that. I went one extra week when her due date was the Friday of Omaha, Friday the 13th. Anyway, unfortunately, I missed the cut and I'd literally packed all my stuff up to fly on Friday the 13th from Atlanta. So as soon as I finished, got all my luggage, went to the airport, managed to get home on Saturday. And I think this is a factor as well. Because I was coming home, she could almost like free her mind and body up to say, right, my partner's going to be here with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let this process start happening. Mm-hmm. So long story short, she ends up, so I get home Saturday, Sunday morning, things start to change and the contractions start happening more frequently. And that was the start of labor for Ashley. So then she gives birth on Monday evening. It was quite a long labor, which then allowed me to get them home from hospital and get back to Boise in time for the finals, which is another story.
It had to be great to be home, and now you have to like try to put that aside, Callum, and like get your PGA Tour card.
Yeah, it was a crazy few days. I mean, I didn't even have time to be jet lagged. I literally got home and had one night's sleep, and then the next night, Ashley was in labor throughout the night, so I didn't go to bed. And once everything was fine with obviously the baby and Ashley was, everything was good, my attention was right, how quick can I get back to America in order to start the finals, you know, to play in Boise? And it just happened to work out that there was one flight, I think it was Wednesday afternoon, which meant I would get there Thursday at midnight, and it all worked out. There was a slight delay from San Francisco to Boise, but I managed to get in at like just after midnight, I want to say like 12:45. So I got to bed at maybe 1:30, and then I was teeing off in the first round of the Boise event at like lunchtime. So I woke up 9 a.m. and I went and did some panic practice just because I hadn't touched a club since Friday. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to feel. So I went and practiced from like 9 till 12 and then obviously teed off. And yeah, had a pretty solid week that week. So it kind of set the journey off. But it's like you say, it's crazy because my mind was almost in 10 different places, you know? birth of my first child, making sure I got flights, and yeah, I just went out and played golf, you know, just try to enjoy it.
So the next week you finish fourth. For people that will never be in this position, what's a walk up 18, knowing that, you know, 29 years, I mean, whenever you started playing golf, 17 years of working to get to the PGA Tour is becoming a reality. What can you, like, put those, like, those last few holes into any sort of words, Callum?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't honestly know. Well, I tell a lie. So when there was a rain delay on the Sunday, we teed off. I teed off, played two holes, and I started birdie. And I didn't know the projections of where I needed to finish in that event on Sunday in order to secure my card. But literally, as we were heading back out in the golf cart, Twitter had popped up and it had said something along the lines of, I think it was Hayden Buckley needed a T10 tied with five other guys in order to secure his card. And then I clicked on it and there it was. It was like, Callum Tarran now needs a top 10 tied with three other people. And I was like, so I kind of did, I seen it, but as soon as I looked at it, I turned my phone off. I was like, right, let's just go and play golf.
Yeah, right.
And from the previous week in Boise on Sunday, where it didn't go to plan, I mean, I shot one over on Sunday, but I felt as though I was trying too hard. Mm-hmm. And then I also felt that same feeling on the Saturday of Ohio. I felt as though I was trying to just play good golf instead of letting it happen.
Yeah.
So on the Sunday, my mindset was, you're playing with your friends at home, go and make 8 birdies and just have fun. And it's weird. I just stuck with that mindset all day. And I started, like you say, I just rolled through the round and started making birdies. And before you know it, I was 5 under or whatever. And I was like, right, it's game time, you know. But there was times on that final round that I was thinking, I think it was on the 15th, I was thinking, I wonder what this is going to feel like on when it's all set and done, and I'm a PGA Tour player. But every time that thought crept into my mind, I had to pull myself back to the present and say, look, just one shot at a time, just next golf shot, and just stay in the moment, because it is so easy to get ahead of yourself in golf. But I think I did a great job of bringing myself back into the present and just dealing with that situation I had at that time. And I birdied 15, and then I made a clutch up and down at 17, and I kind of knew, I was like, right, the last hole in Ohio, it's kind of funky, but you can drive it a long way down there. And I just thought, get this tee shot away and that's it, we're good. Yeah. And I did. Yeah. And then when I seen the cameras on 18, I kind of knew, I was like, right, I must be good. But I still didn't believe it. You know, when that last putt went in, I walked over to, I think it was Kevin Price and Dave. Mm-hmm. And they were like, I said, am I good? And they're like, yeah, you're locked in. I was like, it can't be. Because at that time I looked at the leaderboard, I was T9 or T7. Mm-hmm. But there was still a bunch of guys on the golf course. But once obviously the dust had settled and they were like, look, you're in, you're definitely in. It's confirmed. And like you say, it was just a crazy feeling. A feeling of joy, a feeling of, I was overwhelmed. It was strange. It was really strange. But I think it took a while to sink in, you know, like even a few weeks. I think it only sunk in when I teed it up in Napa in the first event, the Fortinet Championship.
That's the shitty part of the wraparound schedule, is there's literally no time to enjoy that you've just achieved your dream, right, Callum? It's like literally you finish on, I mean, you missed the cut on the last week. So like you finish on Friday afternoon and you're going to an event Monday. There's zero time to enjoy the fact that you've just achieved your dream.
Yeah. And there was a talk between me and my fiance. She said, do you not want to come home? I said, well, I do, but I think it's important that I try and improve my priority ranking in order to maximize my starts in the fall. So obviously it didn't work out and missed the cup, but When I got home, I was only home for, 6 days, and it was time to fly back to for the first event of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really have any time to celebrate. You know, I would have liked the big party and got all the people that have been involved in my career and helped me and to get together and kind of raise a glass and say thank you for everyone. You know, thanks for helping me and helping me get to the PGA Tour. But I didn't have time, you know. It's been a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah. So, it's an amazing story, Kellum, but I want to talk about the seriousness of having. So I was caddying for Mark, people that are listening. I was caddying for Mark at the Shriners Monday. We're playing a practice round, and it's David and Kellum. And it very much hit me, Kellum, like, here's two guys. Obviously, David's story has been told plenty of times. 17 years he's been out there. You've been out there a long time. Just 2 months ago, you achieved your dream, and here you are at a Monday qualifier in 6 weeks into the season, and it's like you don't get starts. It's basically a half a card. What is that pressure like? I know it's easy to say you have to block it out, but this part of the season is just so important for guys graduating from the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah, and because I've never been, my first time getting a PGA Tour card, there's such an importance on, first spot on the regular season and in the finals, you know, because you're fully exempt for the full year. You pretty much get every event or more events than the other guys will. But I'd heard people talking about it. So the guys like Skinsey, another guy who finished, 24th in the regular season, wasn't really happy with his position. And I was thinking, what's he talking about? He's going to get plenty of starts. But now I've played a few events and had to sign up for Monday qualifiers because I'm 15th alternate in the third event of the season. I was like, wow, yeah, I honestly know what they're talking about now, because the starts that we're getting this season, this graduating class, are a lot less than the classes in the past because of COVID, for one. There's more winners. There's a 3-year window of winners. So I think the guys who won in, is it either 18, 19, have still got winners. Yeah, winners category, which is just pushing our category further down the order, you know. It is important. I find myself in that predicament now. I've missed 3 cuts. I'm probably not going to get in Houston. I'm close. Mm-hmm. And then I've obviously got RSM to have a good week. It's half a card. I'm a realist as well. Yeah, I could be back playing Korn Ferry next season. Like, I actually understand that it's going to be, I'm in that situation. But
yeah, that's the debate, right, Kellum? Like, not that you're that, you're making these decisions now, but just because players have been in this position before, like, you get halfway, you get 5-6 events into the next PGA Tour season and you're not advancing up, or you haven't had a good finish. Now you have to think, like, do I just go play Korn Ferry Tour and start this whole process over again? Like, and that's the debate throughout the year, is like, what do I, where do I chase points at, basically?
And at the end of the day, been on the Korn Ferry for 3 years. I've played with guys who are in that situation, you know. I always remember guys dropping back down to play a Korn Ferry event because they weren't in the PGA Tour event.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It is really tough. But on the flip side, if you play good golf, it'll figure itself out.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's been proven. Look at the guys. Some of the guys who've already started. That Cameron Young finished tied second in Sanderson. He's set. Hayden Buckley's had a good start.
Yep.
And a few other guys. Lucas Herbert won.
Yeah.
You know, last week.
It literally takes 1 week and you're going to be, the next season is taken care of for you.
Yeah. So, and like I said, I think you have to be optimistic about that. And you have to take your chances when they come. And hopefully over these next few weeks, I can do that, which will set me up for 2022. And then it would be nice to be able to plan a kind of a schedule of events that you're going to play in instead of being on standby for most of the season, you know.
Callum, you know I'm a huge fan, man. I appreciate you being on. Is there anything you want to plug? Is your girlfriend's Pilates studio, do you want to plug it? Do you want to plug anything of your own? This is your time, dude. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, so my fiance's got a Pilates studio back in the UK. She also has an online platform which offers videos online for people who want to do Pilates at home. So she's on Instagram as Pilates_guru. And her website is pilatesguru.co.uk. If anyone wants to check her out, that'd be great. And then I'd just like to thank people who've helped me along the way, really. Sponsors, Leecom, who sponsor the Sarasota event. Gentleman named Jim. I've been fortunate to play with him, and he jumped on last year, helped me out a little bit, and they're continuing to support me this year. So I'd like to thank, like you say, all the people who've helped me along the way, and hopefully this journey is just getting started.
Well, congratulations on the baby. Hopefully I don't see you at the Houston Monday, because that means you've moved up and you're in the field. Or if I do see you at the Monday, hopefully it's Mark in you both shooting 63 and we can just enjoy the week together. So,
yeah.
Callum, thanks so much, man. I appreciate the time, and huge fan, and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Good Walk Coffee for supporting me. I just can't thank them enough. Go to goodwalkcoffee.com and use the promo code FIREPIT for 20% off your complete order.